There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounce signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at a world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host on today's program, Why We Need to Protect Low Power FM. It's on the docket, and the FCC is giving it serious consideration, but there's real world examples of what happens. We'll be speaking to Brad Johnson with station KQRP in Salida, California. And he's going to tell us some of the troubles he's having, with some translator stations. You do want to stay tuned. Now, Brad Johnson is with station KQRB in Salida, California, and he made his first appearance on the Media Geek radio show going back nearly 5 years to the fall of 2002, we met up at the Reclaim the Media Conference that happened in Seattle then. And that was, I believe, before KQRP had actually been able to get on the air. And Brad is a refugee from Clear Channel Communications, having worked as a radio engineer with a cluster stations that got bought out by Clear Channel Consolidated, and then they eliminated much of their staff. And he's here to tell us more about what's going on with KQRP. Welcome aboard, Brad. Glad you could join us.
Hi, Paul. Glad to be with you today. An honor.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And I also will mention that KQRP has been a longtime supporter, and you carry the program of Media Geek. You've been doing that for years.
Yeah, probably 4 or 5 years now before we actually had a license, when we were only an internet broadcaster.
Yeah,
we were carrying your show.
Thank you very much. And so maybe to start, you could tell us a little bit more about KQRP, how long it's been on the air, and what kind of programming you put out there.
Well, KQRP would be similar to a Pacifica station or a large community broadcast station, except we have a much smaller signal. We have mostly news talk programming and also local independent bands. We partnered with a local teen recording studio that's a nonprofit, and they give kids a chance to get a record out for $15 an hour in the recording studio. And they've been producing shows with interviews with local teen bands, and we've been playing it on the radio to help the bands get some airplay in the area. That's one of our latest projects that's been working out very well. We also play a lot of news talk and what I like to call the real news. Which is, gives people a better view of what's going on with the war and politics and stuff you would hear on a Pacifica station. Shows like the one you just heard, Free Speech Radio News, is a mainstay in our format, as well as Democracy Now! And Counterspin, all the talk shows that are on the independent circuit, stuff that you would find on the internet websites like radioforall.net.
And so, you know, it sounds a lot like stations that anyone who's listening to Media Geek on the FM airwaves are probably used to listening to, a good community station. And how long has KQRP been on the air?
We got our license in 2003, after waiting nearly 3 years for the FCC to figure out how LPFM was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
We applied in June of 2000 during a tiny little one-week opportunity window when the stations in California would have a chance to apply, and I spent quite a bit of time promoting it on my cable TV show, trying to get other groups to apply for low-power stations and to get the word out, because if you didn't apply during that tiny little 1 or 2 week window, you missed your chance, and then there may be not another chance to do that in our lifetime the way things are going, certainly not until the end of the current Republican administration.
Mm-hmm.
After we applied for a channel, Congress intervened just a few weeks after the window closed and took away the opportunity for that channel and knocked out about 80% of the LPFM applicants. We really didn't know how many people were going to apply, and it turned out over 20 groups in our county had applied for a license, most of them conservative church groups, all of them actually. of them were knocked out by the congressional interaction. The big broadcast lobbyists lobbied Congress and told them that these tiny little 100-watt stations would somehow magically cause interference to the 50,000-watt stations on the dial. This, of course, was a lie, but the broadcast lobby group's very powerful, carries a lot of influence, and easily got the legislation snuck into an appropriations bill in the middle of the night.
And that was at the end of 2000.
Yeah, and that was devastating for the low-power FM applicants.
So you found another frequency then that was open and were able to refile?
Two years later, they let us have an opportunity to amend our application and pick another frequency. Unfortunately, the frequency was already occupied by two full-power stations from out of the area. So there's two signals on the channel that we wound up getting a license for.
Hmm.
So as soon as you leave our community, we start becoming interfered with quite heavily by these two other stations, one of them a Clear Channel station, grandfathered in with 69,000 watts.
Wow.
Which is more than any other California station has. In California, the stations are limited to 50,000.
Wow.
And then there's another station playing Spanish on our channel with about 8,000 watts from up in the Sierras. So they have about a 5,000-foot antenna advantage on us.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about Salida, about the community there, how big
Salida
it is?
Salida's a really small town. It's only about 3 miles across, a pretty dense urban area, mostly. It's a bedroom community for people who commute to the Bay Area, which is about an hour from here.
Okay.
We are not incorporated. We don't have a bank in our community, so we're kind of a suburb to Modesto, which is a larger area, a town of about 200,000.
Okay. So you definitely probably don't get a lot of Salida-oriented news and information on the rest of the radio dial. Is that a good guess?
No, there's no, no, none at all. Very little, even in Modesto. Modesto is a corporate market where we have three radio group operators, Clear Channel, Citadel, and MS has some Spanish stations here. And, you know, most of those buildings are empty, too, where they have six stations in one building and one DJ at night kind of situations, cluster stations. So there's not a lot of local news. There's no investigative reporting locally. NPR has a presence in Stockton, which is 40 miles away, and then that's just a satellite station to Sacramento. So the news that we get is basically from Sacramento, which is 90 miles from our area.
Mm-hmm. Very little about Salida. I think that's the plight.
Not at all about Salida.
That's the plight of a lot of small towns, indeed. Even if they're involved, if they're parts of larger metroplexes or between metroplexes, is increasingly becoming the case in a lot of states. They don't, even if they have stations officially licensed to that city or town, the stations aren't really serving that population with news.
No, not at all. Not at all. We have no investigative reporting going on in our whole county, really. If there is any news reporting, it's somebody picking up the local McClatchy newspaper and reading stories out of the paper. They don't write their own news stories or call out or, you know, send reporters to the town meetings or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
our little station manages to broadcast the town meeting here in Salida, though, and frequently we carry the county supervisors' meetings and the Modesto City Council meetings. They're available on the public access cable TV, and then that allows a conduit to get it here on the radio station. And whenever it's relevant for the local audience, we put it on the air. And we have no advertisers to complain because we're a non-commercial station. We can interrupt our programming for things like that.
Exactly. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, you were in commercial radio before getting involved in non-commercial low-power FM. You worked for Clear Channel, at least briefly.
Well, yeah, I worked in commercial radio for about 20 years since I was a teenager, basically. Worked my way up to being a chief engineer and did all the different announcing stuff on the way, and had worked for the local large station in this area for about 12 years, and then Clear Channel's predecessor, AM/FM, had come into the market and bought a few of the stations. And then once Clear Channel came to be, they had purchased the station that I worked for and moved four of their other stations into the building where I was the chief engineer. And once they had all the stations in the building and all the computers hooked up, they were able to lay off basically most of the staff, over 70 people in
our
area. And I was one of the first to go, and very proud of it.
Increasingly, I mean, talking to people who've gotten involved in community radio and low-power FM over the last 10 years, more and more I meet folks, some of whom call themselves refugees, like our friend John Anderson, who's a frequent guest on Media Geek and is behind the website DIYmedia.net. himself. He calls himself a refugee of the Telecom Act of 1996, which allowed Clear Channel to be created, and saw the writing on the wall as a commercial radio journalist in Wisconsin. And he got out while he could so he could go to graduate school and study it and see what's at work behind the scenes. But let's turn the clock forward now to the present time. You've had KQRP on the air now for 5 years, just about?
About 5 years now.
About 5 years, bringing good community-oriented service programming to the Salida area. But you're having some problems on the dial, not just with the two stations that you have sort of on either side.
Actually, they're on our channel. We share the channel with two full power stations.
So geographically on either side, but on the same channel. But you recently had some troubles with a new transmitter there in the area.
Well, there's a new translator that's come on, and it's such an unfair situation. While we were waiting and waiting and waiting for the FCC to give us a chance to apply for a second channel after they made the first channel we picked unavailable, they opened up another window for translators. And what translators are is little repeater stations that rebroadcast big stations. So while we were waiting for our license to be approved, the FCC decided to open up another window, which was several weeks long, to allow all the people who already had radio stations to apply for repeater stations. So they allowed that to happen while we were still waiting for our first station. They allowed stations to add second and third voices on their programming. So we didn't even have an opportunity to apply for a translator because we didn't have a station to translate yet.
Right.
So these people, like the big church groups and NPR, went and applied for these frequencies that all over the country and sucked up, gobbled up greedily all these channels that were available, small channels. And basically, they've took away a lot of other opportunity for small community stations. And recently, they turned on one of these repeater stations on the next channel over from our channel, the very next channel over.
So why don't you explain what that means in terms of what that means the next channel?
The radio stations are all sitting on bar stools at the bar, up and down the radio dial. Each bar stool represents one of the channels. And normally, you wouldn't be able to sit closer than two bar stools next to another person to allow these big, fat, greedy radio stations to take up two or three bar stools next to them because their butt is just too big to fit on one bar stool. So the thing with this bar stool, it is an analogy to the way the radio dial works. And you don't want to have to just sit right next to somebody else at the bar when there's plenty of bar stools for you to be spaced out. And the big broadcasters think that they don't want to have anybody sitting within two bar stools of them at the bar. And maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong. But if that's the rules for little stations, then these repeater stations don't have to obey those rules.
And by little stations, you mean low-power FM stations.
Yeah, well, yeah, the little stations, the little low-power FM stations. They're only 100 watts, so they could be at the next bar stool to a big station. And they wouldn't cause interference to the big station, but the big station will cause interference to the little station.
Mm-hmm.
They'd cast a shadow over it, so to speak.
And so you've got this translator that
went
on.
The translators don't have to abide the barstool rules, and they're able to get on the next seat next to a big station. So the FCC allowed these companies to put a station on the next channel over from our station, but we would have to be two barstools away from any other station. So they allowed this other station to come on the air on the next channel over from us, and as soon as they turned that thing on, it started causing a lot of interference to our little station here in our area.
And so what frequency is KQRP on?
We're on 106.1 FM at the top of the dial.
And this translator repeater station?
It came on 105.9, the next channel down.
Wow. I mean, that is truly the next channel down.
Right.
That's amazing.
The lobbyists were saying that the low-power FM stations should be three channels away from other stations.
Yeah.
But they are allowing these repeater stations to come on the very next channel over.
Wow.
Which really is a little too close. I mean, you do need a little elbow room, especially if it's in the next town over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we already had a station on 105.9, but it was coming in from Fresno, so it was 90 miles away. They had a weak signal, and their weak signal next to our weak signal was compatible, so we could share the dial with them, and we could hear each other. And there was no interference.
Right, because geography plays into this. Is the further away you are from the station, the weaker the signal.
Right, and if the signals are more equal, if they're both small signals in the area, your radio can sort it out. But if one of them is more powerful than the other, then there's usually some interference.
And this station at 105.9, was it located in Salida?
No, it was actually in the next town over in Modesto on top of one of the tall buildings.
Okay, so it got some height, because again, height, the higher up you are, the right. better your propagation, right?
So they have, being on the tall building, they got to have a bigger signal than us just by the height alone.
Mm-hmm.
And the ironic thing is that they were rebroadcasting one of the church LPFM stations in Modesto. So another little station in Modesto, which broadcasts church programming mainly from a satellite dish, was, I guess, testing this translator station, and it was playing the exact same thing. So they were essentially showing up on two different places in the dial with about the same coverage on both of the stations. So it was kind of pointless for them to be broadcasting on two channels on the dial with about the same coverage on both stations. But one of them was really causing a lot of interference for our little station.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as John Anderson has done research on, and which I've covered on the Media Geek show here and covered on the website, the vast number of those translator repeater stations during that window that happened in 2003 went to a very small number of Christian broadcast groups who, more often than not, then resold those construction permits. You know, these are, of course, construction permits which you get free from the federal government, resold those permits off to other churches and other organizations. It doesn't, this other church wouldn't happen to be affiliated with the Calvary Chapel system, would it?
That's exactly who they're affiliated with. And I like to call that the Calvary Stampede.
Oh, yeah.
Because they stampeded the FCC with these license applications. And, you know, you really, they should be allocated one per organization, because one organization certainly doesn't need 1,000 of those. They're starting a radio network, not just a community station.
Well, that's the Calvary Satellite Network, which is operated home station of Twin Falls, Idaho. So because there is no limit on the distance and number of translator stations on for non-commercial stations, especially Christian stations, they basically create this satellite network out of translators.
Right.
And if you go to csnradio.com, you can see a list that is 8 pages long of all of the stations run now. I've not had a chance to dump this into a spreadsheet, but there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these translator stations that are all so-called repeaters of this one station. Of course, the ironic thing about these is these are not stations that can originate their own programming. They have to be repeaters.
It's just outrageous how many stations they have. It's just ridiculous for them to have 500 or 600 of these repeater stations all broadcasting the same thing and not really being tied to the community or broadcasting things from the community. I mean, they're not going to broadcast the town meeting. They're not going to broadcast the local musicians. They're going to be asking for money so that they can pray for you, and that kind of programming that really is there's plenty of that going on the dial already for them to suck up all these licenses and not be responsive to the community and not be involved in community events, not be involved in local government affairs, not help people become educated for local elections, not broadcast election returns. I mean, there's so many things that these community stations could be doing, but they won't be. And then all these repeater stations are allowed more power and a better directional antenna system from higher heights than the LPFM stations. So the problem is the wrong people are getting the licenses, and they're getting them for the wrong reasons. They're not getting them to serve the community. They're sucking up all of these licenses and trafficking in them and selling them for money to organizations that are well-financed.
And you're listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman. I'm your host and talking to Brad Johnson, who is with KQRP, low power FM station in Salida, California. We're talking about some problems that they're having with translator repeater stations interfering with their signal. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. You can download the program at radio.MediaGeek.net. You can also subscribe to the podcast, or you can listen there right in your browser. If you have any comments about the programs, please send them to me, Paul@MediaGeek.net. So one of the reasons I want to talk about this here, Brad, is because there's actual rules pending now, I'm sure you're aware, at the FCC that could perhaps come to the aid of your situation or situations like yours. And that there's actually a proposal for rulemaking in front of the FCC. Of course, it's got an arcane name of 99.25. But one of the things that the FCC is taking up rather directly is the relationship between low-power FM stations and translators. At the moment, the FCC has said they have not reached a conclusion on whether these stations are should be considered co-equal. Go ahead.
Well, I've contacted my local congressman about it, and
okay.
Dennis Cardoza is our congressman here, and he's on board with this, and I think our Republican representative is also on board, but I can't get really straight answers from them most of the time. But the Congress has got a low-power radio act going through.
That's true as well.
Radio act.
Right. There's two things going on. You have the Community Radio Act into both the House and the Senate, and if it's something which would restore, if it passed, low-power FM to its 2000 original standards, which would mean that your station could be on a dial closer to a full-power station.
It would allow us more flexibility in picking our channel, and we wouldn't have to pick a substandard channel that we got stuck with.
Yep.
The channel, there were several channels available, and I picked the one that would be best for us. Being a local radio engineer, I have experience with
yeah.
what the radio dial is in my community, so I picked the best channel for us. And then Congress came through and said, "No, that's not a good channel," and I
right.
got stuck with this other channel where I'm fighting two other stations on my channel.
And so, it would also open up more stations in Salida or in the Salida area.
It'll open up more frequencies in urban areas, which is the really important
yeah.
thing. It'll allow bigger cities to have community stations like KQRP and the other community stations. Looking at the FCC website today, I can see that there's nearly 700 stations that have been licensed
right.
across the country. And in my area, we were lucky enough to actually have four low-power FM stations licensed in my county.
And that's amazing, considering that you are situated between two really major metroplexes at
Sacramento
the Bay Area.
And San Francisco and Fresno.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were really lucky to get that many in here. But you know what? There was 15 or 20 groups that applied for stations. So there were a lot more people that wanted the licenses that couldn't get them. So there's obviously a need for localism in radio to serve the local communities, because the big companies aren't doing it.
Yeah.
And the little low-power stations are just that's probably the best way to serve the community. And in the days gone by, before the 1970s, there were low-power stations. They were at high schools and colleges. And community groups had these educational stations, but NPR got the rules changed and the low-power stations went away, and these little high school and college stations mostly disappeared, except in larger cities where they could afford to upgrade to become a high-power station. So
most
it's good
definitely.
To see the low-power thing come back around, and we've been able to serve our community in ways that commercial broadcasters would never get involved with. For instance, we play children's programming on the
mm-hmm.
weekends. Commercial broadcasters totally ignore the audience below age 12 because they don't count for rating surveys where the money
and they don't from. And they don't have enough capital and spending power. And one thing I do want to point out then is, as I was mentioning at the FCC is taking up this question of the relationship between low power FM stations and translators. And one of the questions is whether or not a low-power FM station could have be treated as a so-called primary rather than secondary service. Right now, it's a secondary service where you can interpret that as second-class citizen.
Exactly, like we're slaves that don't count as real people. It's terrible the way that low-power stations are treated as second-class stations, and we're not afforded protection from interference or protection from a high-power station locating a little closer to us and claiming then that we need to shut our station off because we're causing interference to a primary service station, a high-power commercial station. It's ridiculous that one station would be able to change their license parameters or move across town, move their tower a couple of miles closer, and then insist that another station should just simply go off the air. Our station is established. We should be protected like other stations. This is America. We're all supposed to be equal. We're not supposed to have first, second, and third class citizenships and first and second and third class radio stations. It's ridiculous that the playing field isn't more democratic.
I agree with you there. And if you want to learn more about this, since the FCC is taking up this question in particular about the status, and you can comment. The great thing about...
They're seeking comment.
They are seeking comment. And the great thing is that your comment does count. Certainly, there are NAB, National Association of Broadcaster Lawyers, and the National Religious Broadcasters Lawyers, I'm sure, are busy submitting their comments and showing all the reasons why low-power FM stations should have to be subservient to translators and full-power stations and do not deserve protection. But the FCC will be hard-pressed to ignore thousands upon thousands of comments from regular folks who love their community radio stations, who love their low-power FM stations, or wish they had low-power FM stations, wish they were lucky enough to have community stations, and believe this should be protected. And so it's called 9925, but it's easy for you to go, actually, and make your comments on this, because the folks at the Prometheus Radio Project have made this very easy. If you just go to PrometheusRadio.org, and you go to their website, and they have a menu item right there. File comments now to expand low power FM radios right on the front page of their website right now. You click on that. It gives you a little bit more information, and it gives you the ability to click through to take action and actually learn how to file your comments. So they make this really easy on you. If you also want to learn more, you can go to a website called Rec Networks, RECNET.com, also has information about how you can comment. You know, because low power FM, you know, came about to a large extent because average folks lobbied the FCC, sent in their comments to the FCC saying we need to have low power FM. But I'm sure people just like you, Brad, right?
I got a little more involved with that at the NAB 2002 convention.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
I actually approached Michael Copps, the FCC, and a member of the FCC commission, and said, you know, it's been 2 years since we applied for our license. Why is there a delay? When will we get a chance to get our LPFM license, or at least hear whether our application will be approved or dismissed? And just a few weeks after that, I think they had a little bit of an impact, because a few weeks after that, the FCC announced that there would be a window for us to amend our application and get our license rolling again. So the FCC, there are members of the FCC that do want to help us. The FCC is a member of 5 commissioners appointed by the president in power, and 3 of those commissioners match the political party of the president in power. So for the last 7 years, you know, we've had 3 Republicans and 2 Democrats on the FCC. Luckily, the 2 Democrats that are on the FCC are hip to this situation. Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein are both very much alive from the neck up and understand how important community radio is and how important the media is in serving our community and helping us become a better democracy. And I'm really hopeful that if we have a Democratic president in the next election cycle, he will make Michael Copps the commissioner in charge of the FCC, and then there will be 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans heading our FCC, and we will see the media move towards democracy and away from fascism.
Couldn't say it better myself there, Brad. Thank you so much for taking some time to speak with me. Best of luck to you and KQRP, and the best of luck to the community radio listeners there in Salida, California.
Thank you, Paul, for everything you do. Your show is so enlightening for the media, and it's a complex situation people take for granted, and I'm really glad that you're able to spotlight this important subject and all the important subjects that you do. I really enjoy the show.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, and take care.
Thank you.
This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.